Indira Venkat is the Senior Vice President of Research at AARP. AARP.org is the website. A new survey has found some interesting things about how ready folks are to retire. Indira, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Catch me up a little bit on this survey. When did it happen? Who did you survey? What did you find?
So this happened in January, and we do this survey two times a year, where we are keeping a finger on the pulse of, you know, financial expectations, behaviors, attitudes of persons 30 and over. But what I'm going to be talking to you about today is about older adults, 50 and over, where we found that about 61% of them are worried that they will not have enough money to last in retirement. That's a large number.
Yeah.
And when we looked into this a little bit further, some of the reasons why they are, you know, there is this worry is there are everyday expenses and housing costs that are a big concern to them. They're seeing this in the grocery store, in the gas pump, you know, day in and day out. There's also another core issue in the background, which is that many working Americans don't have access to a retirement account through their job. And if you look at the private sector workforce today, that's almost 57 million, half of the private sector workforce, don't have the option to save for retirement at work through their paycheck. And what we know from our research is that if they do have that ability, they are much more likely to save for retirement.
More than half of people at work, I guess I am, and I'm not surprised by that. More than half of people don't even have the opportunity to get a matching 401k or something like that from their employer.
That's right.
I'm sorry to hear that. You would think almost, I don't know if we need to have a law that would, you know, make it mandatory that employers of a certain size offer something like that. I guess I've always worked for big enough companies, Indira, that that's almost always been an option for me. The company would have some sort of match.
So what we are doing at AARP is we've been working with the states across the country to launch state automatic individual retirement account programs, also known as the auto IRA, to expand this opportunity to larger numbers of adults.
And 61% of folks over the age of 50 worry they don't have enough money to retire. I was hearing about another sort of statistic along those lines, that more and more Americans think they will never stop working. They will always have to find some even meager means of employment. Does that match with what your survey shows?
Yeah. And if I were to add one more statistic there, is that 20% of those not yet retired among those who are 50 and over have no retirement savings at all, none. And so our survey is showing that one in four of older adults yet to retire expect to never retire. So you see the context behind it. And this number has stayed steady over the past few years.
What's the solution? I wonder what you can do, I can do, the government can do, people can do.
I think, you know, from a standpoint of, from an individual standpoint, it's about the importance of having a plan. And I think older adults recognize the importance of having a plan. 94% say it is, but only 21% have the plan. So how do you get started with the plan of defining your goal, creating the timeline, and to monitor your progress? And, you know, if that means having someone you're accountable to help you stay on track towards this goalpost, you know, that would be one. For those who do have access to a 401k or similar plan, to make sure that they are taking advantage of it, contributing so that at least they're maximizing the employer match, because that, in effect, is free money.
I know that the AARP has free resources for people, too. AARP.org is a good place to start if you have questions or if you need some help. Indira Venkat is a Senior Vice President of Research, AARP.org. Indira, very interesting. Thanks for the help today.
Thank you.
Bree Fowler joins us, a senior reporter at CNET. And Bree, I see that you guys are looking at a story that Pete and I have been talking about too, and that is the banning of cell phones in classrooms. California, Los Angeles is going to do it. New York is going to do it. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, I mean, government is looking to you know, get involved with this and make sure that kids don't have phones during the school day. You know, they're worried about the mental health risks of social media, among other things.
I understand that. The story I saw, though, didn't say exactly how LA is going to do this, though. It sounds like there's still, that's a work in progress, huh?
Yeah, it's definitely something you have to hash out. The California Governor Gavin Newsom wants to restrict it for the entire state. But these are things that are usually decided at the, you know, local and district level.
Do you have enough thought about that? My son was talking to me yesterday. He went to the John Mulaney show, and they had him put his phone in a little bag. And then when he left the concert, the show, they had to use a magnetic device to free the bag or the phone up. And he said that worked pretty well for, you know, how many thousands of people went to the Mulaney show. I wonder what a good way to do this is.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand with a live taping of a TV show, you definitely don't want phones going off, you know, all the time. You know, how many times have I been at the theater and a phone's gone off? It's super annoying.
Yeah.
But with kids, you know, it takes it to another level where, you know, they have the access to the world's information. They could, you know, cheat on assignments or, you know, access things on social media that might not be age appropriate, you know, and kids get distracted. You know, we've all had those days where we're kind of sitting at our desk and we start playing dumb games or, you know, scrolling Instagram. I really don't need my 9-10-year-old doing that.
So I wonder if the schools should not allow them on the property or put them in lockers, or because it seems to me like saying, okay, you got to turn your phone off. Is not going to work.
No, it's tough because sometimes, like my daughter's in high school, she needs it for assignments. She needs a quick calculator. She needs to look something up. And really, your phone is the easiest way to do that versus, you know, dragging out your laptop or your iPad. But also, a lot of kids, they walk to school. They take buses. You know, my kids took phones to school, or my older kid did, at a young age because she was taking public transit by herself, and I didn't feel safe. You know, I didn't feel like she was safe if she didn't have one, but at the same time, I didn't want her playing with it at school either.
What do you say about the argument that if there's a school shooter or some sort of mass violent situation, that the kids need to be able to reach the parents or vice versa? What do you say about that scenario?
Well, you know, statistically speaking, school shootings are still, thank God, super, super rare. You know, they grab headlines and attention, but the odds of that happening, hopefully, in your kid's school are very slim. I mean, I like being able to get a hold of especially my older daughter and letting her know that I'm not going to be home, or that, you know, where I left the key for her, things like that. You get very used to being able to get a hold of your kids on demand. But at the same time, you know, I don't want her staring at her phone in class either.
But also, just my argument to the proposition I just put before you is that that's not going to help your kid. If there is something really awful going on at the school, talking to the kid in real time does not help the kid. It does not. It's not any safer for you to be on the phone with your child at that moment. So if Uncle Harry dies, you call the school and they come to the classroom and they pull the kid out of the class. It just seems to me like every what if that people throw up, there's a better response to it than the kid has the phone on all the time.
Right. I mean, and there is always a way to get a hold of your kid. I mean, my daughter's high school basically said, you know, if you have an emergency, call the office. We will, you know, find your child for you. It's not that big of a deal. You know, you don't need to be sending them messages and things like that, and having them look at things all through the day, especially with little kids. You know, my son's 10 and he still does not have a device that he takes to school that he can communicate with.
Talk to me about the electric vehicle maker that has filed for Chapter 11.
Fisker, also in California, they filed for Chapter 11 this week. It's the second electric startup to do that. You know, they're just saying that, you know, like other companies in the EV industry, it's been a tough market. The economic headwinds have not been good, and they just haven't been able to operate efficiently. So they are going to be selling off their assets and looking for a way to move forward.
I'm sorry to hear that. I don't know that Fisker, I don't know those vehicles. Would I recognize them? Are they in the Midwest as well?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I think it may be a California thing. They definitely had a hard time picking up market share from Tesla. Tesla is definitely, you know, dominated because they were there. They were so early on this. And then you had the big guys, you know, the big three.
Sure.
From the U.S. jumping in, and they had the money to put behind this and to invest in R&D and hire people. And they've really been able to, you know, stake their claim. But at the same time, everyone has seen sales drop this year. The infrastructure isn't quite there enough to make people feel comfortable buying an electric vehicle, especially if they're like a one-car family or it would be their primary vehicle. And, you know, even the big guys have had a hard time making money off of this. It's just that they can take the hit a little bit easier than startups.
Where do you think the EV market will be in 5 years?
You know, you're definitely going to see more of them because the infrastructure will improve. Maybe it'll depend on the incoming administration, whatever that happens to be, as to how much they want to invest in infrastructure. You know, I see electric charging stations everywhere now in New York. You know, I think about here, I don't have a garage or really a driveway. So if I were to buy an EV, I would have to have somewhere I know I could leave my car and charge it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you're looking at urban environments, that's kind of a big challenge right there. People are starting to wire their houses, though, for that higher voltage so they can get their car juiced pretty quick.
I think that's an interesting point, though. My car in Chicago is the same situation. I don't have a garage. I don't have a driveway. I park wherever I can find one near my place. And I haven't thought about that. But if I had an EV, I would have to go to a public place, maybe wait in line. Hopefully nobody's cut the cord there. And so that's yet another challenge. Bree Fowler is a senior reporter at CNET.com. Okay, Bree, my best to your family.
Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Stephen Esposito is here, the president of Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest. I'm glad you could give us some of your time today, Stephen. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
I wanted you to talk a little bit about the market's performance overall. It's up. We touched 40,000. We're below it, but the indices are all doing pretty well compared to a year ago, for instance. Pick the timeline. We're in record territory these days, but we talked yesterday with, we were talking about, I don't remember the name of the guy that we were referencing yesterday, who was very bearish on the market. And his problem with it was that it's still just a few stocks like NVIDIA, which are keeping the markets up. And that for the last 52 weeks, there have been more losers than gainers. I wonder how you just see the markets overall.
You know, that's a very good observation. That's what I was going to basically say. Right now, the stat I read this morning is 20 stocks out of the S&P 500 make up over 80% of the gains. That's not a healthy market, in my opinion. We had a broadening out a couple of months ago. We were on the show talking about it was broadening out, and that was great.
Yeah.
And then recently, it started going back again. But I think I've noticed the difference when the confidence in the Fed is there or not there. Are we going to cut? Are we not going to cut? And every time it changes, we go to that. When people get scared, I think they focus on those 20 or 30 names and nothing else matters. And you're back to that narrative again today or in the last week or two. So I think that's the concern. But I can tell you there's a lot of cheap companies out there, and I'm a contrarian by nature, and I like when they're cheap. I don't look at that as a negative. I look at it as an opportunity. But, yeah, today you're getting a pullback in many of the tech names today. And you're near the end of the quarter, so that's also playing a role. So I think his observations are 100% correct, and I agree with them. But in that, I'm looking at it as a positive that I can go buy a lot of cheap companies with good dividends down here, and that's what I'm looking to do because we always have cash available. So we're going to take advantage of it as it stands right now. And I've actually sold some tech names off recently, a little bit some positions, and cut back on them in the last few days just to take some nice profits and have some cash to buy some of the, I think, the cheaper stocks, the cheaper companies that represent good value.
Well, those will be good buys if those companies perform better. I mean, are you optimistic that the rest of the market's going to catch up a little bit?
I think it will. I mean, there's over $6 trillion in money market, and it's earning a good rate of return. But as rates will come down, I believe, as they start to come down because the inflation numbers are coming in much better. As they come in, if they come down, I think money will broaden out, so to speak. And as people's confidence returns, it'll broaden out again. So that's really what I'm waiting for. And I've learned over the decades, not years, but over 40 years, I'd like to buy them when they hate them and sell them when they love them. But you have to have patience.
Well, if we were poised for a massive pullback here, 30, 40, 50%, and those are some of the numbers that Terry Savage was quoting yesterday, then I wonder what the Fed's action can do to forestall that. Is it more pullbacks?
Sorry. 30, 40 in stocks or the market in general? I didn't hear the
market in general.
That's a big move. 30, 40%. That makes a crash look like a good day. I don't see that happening. I can see individual names doing things like that, but there's too many. If you look in the healthcare field, some of the banking sectors, it would take something pretty severe for that to happen. The P ratios outside the Mag 7 are really reasonable. The valuations price to book, and the economy is doing well. That's one of the biggest complaints, is the economy is doing too well, and the Fed not going to drop rates. So I'm not that afraid at all. It would take some kind of a major catastrophe for, I think, the market to drop like that.
Okay, but then just talk to me about the Fed's actions. What should they do? I mean, so is one rate cut advisable? Would two rate cuts maybe insulate us a little more from that sort of thing?
I think the inverted yield curve is a problem. We talk about that for how long now? You still have this inverted yield curve. So you need the Fed to flatten it at least to make people feel more comfortable. A lot of real estate, they're worried about commercial real estate because of the inverted yield curve and the refinance rate. So I'm a guy, get out ahead of it. Wait till it becomes a problem. Get out ahead of it. And I think if they do that by dropping rates a couple, you know, maybe 0.5% or more, I think it would be good. Because I think, again, they're behind the curve consistently. And I think they're behind it again today, as we're seeing in today's numbers on the housing markets, et cetera. So why wait till the fire's there? You know, get out ahead of it and stop it.
I'm assuming every rate cut will be a quarter point. Are you also?
Yeah, I would assume that. If it's a half a point, that would make the market nervous, I think.
Yeah.
Right. Then they're going to say, what does the Fed see that we don't know?
Right.
I think, you know, measured a quarter point, I prefer that they went in September and again, maybe in November to get them two out there and signal potentially more. Because I do think inflation's coming down. And I wouldn't wait till after it happens. That's the point of the Fed. They should be out ahead of it. And that's where I think people are nervous, the confidence in their ability to do that.
What are the numbers you were looking at today? Was it the housing numbers you said?
Well, the housing numbers, the way they started, they were lower than expected. And lately, the last few times, you've been seeing better than expected numbers. The Philly Fed is 1.3 versus 4.9 expected. What we've talked about in the past is whatever is expected rarely is what comes in. And I think that in itself is making investors nervous that all the experts are giving their predictions and they're not even close. So that doesn't exactly instill confidence either. So that's what I think is playing the whole role here. But I do think they're overreacting to the downside in many of the companies that are non-top 20. There's some really cheap stocks out there.
In specific sectors, what areas do you like?
Look at healthcare. I mean, look at the healthcare. Look at many of the financials, I believe. I don't think many of the financials are as bad. I remember a year ago, we had a banking crisis. And that stopped with three or four banks. So if you look at the healthcare stocks, it's amazing some of the dividends and the low price earnings multiples, like we're never going to use healthcare again.
Yeah.
So there's sectors there. The consumer stocks. And one of the problems is the consumer is doing too well. I think that's going to continue, especially if the Fed cuts rates. If the Fed does cut rates, that'll be good for financials, which I think are cheap right now. So there's pockets underneath the surface that I think are just, you know, paying us great dividends while waiting for, you know, low P ratio stocks.
Are you putting money into utilities?
Like. No. I mean, I think the drop in rates, I avoided that whole thing on the downside. And you know, if it goes up, that's great. There's too many other companies we're buying for clients that are paying us really good dividends. And I don't need much of a move in the stock to get a good return because the dividends are so great. And the ones I'm not buying utilities, though.
The logic behind that was with AI and all of the power needs that the world's going to have, that utility stocks are doing pretty well.
Yeah, they are. They should. They're kind of a safe haven for most investors.
Not real sexy, I know.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a good reason. But when you're getting 5.2% of money market, that's a pretty good place to stay parked when you're afraid. But as that comes down, and that'll come down simultaneously with things are going to get better, the confidence will return, and then you'll see, a massive shift into the other sectors of the market that can move a nice percentage with not very much trouble.
Right.
There's just no money in there.
Well, that was part of the conversation too yesterday, Stephen. So would you feel, how bad would you feel if you put your assets in something yielding 5% but was safe, and then the market goes up 10% and you wish you had been on that bus, but at least you would have felt confident that if you were in a treasury bill, you wouldn't suffer the downside if the market has some major correction coming. I wonder what you think about that logic now.
That's exactly the way it's, you can't look in the past, right? So the way you do is we have a lot of capital sitting in what you're talking about in those money markets. We don't have any bonds, no debt instruments, no preferreds, nothing. We haven't. We thank God we missed that whole thing. But we're looking now to keep the money in the money markets, what the ratio is depending on the client. And then we deploy capital in the other areas that are non-utilities that are giving us good dividends that we think will grow as the economy grows. Remember, the last 16 times an incumbent president ran for re-election, the market went up, no matter what their political party is. So that will hold.
Say that again.
The last 16 times in the country an incumbent president was running for re-election, no matter what political party, of course, the market was up that year.
Regardless of whether or not that incumbent won re-election?
Right.
Wow.
Go look at the history. So, and I've lived a lot of it. So not all 16 presidents.
I don't know what the connection is there. That's, but it would seem if it happened 16 times, there must be something going on there. That I guess it's everybody.
Usually, the party in power has the ability to do things. Obviously, going into the election economically to get whether it's Republican or Democrat doesn't matter. They have the ability to do things to have a good market, a good economy going into that area. So that could be a role. But again, I think we're at the cusp of interest rate cuts, which would help the market
and the
confidence level.
Yeah.
So all those factors combined can do well. And whether they cut in September or they cut in November, I don't think it really makes that much of a difference if you're a long-term investor. But I like taking advantage of both the things you pointed out. Really good returns on money markets. And there's many dividend stocks that are out there paying that are non-utilities that are cheap in the healthcare world.
Yeah.
And then we also have some tech names. So it's balance. I think everything, and it comes to, I've learned in my career, is balance. Don't try to hit it out of the park, get a lot of singles, take a walk, get a double, just get on base.
I get it, and I'll stop you there. Stephen Esposito is the president of Yellowstone Wealth Management in Lake Forest. Click on yellowstonewm.com. Okay, Stephen, very interesting. I'm glad you were on today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
More business news now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. One of the shuttered Dom's Kitchen and Market locations will soon become the Fresh Market. The North Carolina grocery chain has posted job openings on its website for roles at the 2730 North Halsted location, according to Cranes. That location is one of the Dom's that closed back in April ahead of a bankruptcy filing. The posting says new store coming soon to Lincoln Park in Chicago. The Fresh Market has 160 stores in 22 states, including 4 in Illinois. The job postings include manager-level roles. There's no date available for when the store might open. The Fresh Market Illinois stores are in Crystal Lake, Geneva, Lake Forest, and Wilmette. Stores are also planned in Northbrook and Naperville. The video shout-out company Cameo is moving its headquarters to Fulton Market. The company signed a 6-year lease for 2 floors of space at 320 North Elizabeth. The first floor will be used for events, and the second floor will be used for offices. Cameo currently has headquarters in River North in about half the space of the new location. The new lease comes after a successful round of fundraising. Cameo also plans to hire some new employees in 2025. The expansion comes after a rough patch that included a drop in valuation and staff cuts. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of food, Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And June Dairy Month continues, so go ahead and hug a dairy farmer, with his or her permission, of course. And more importantly, if you know a farmer, or anyone for that matter, who seems to be struggling, and maybe you're worried that they are suicidal, what do you do? What do you say? How do you talk with them? Answers after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. As we heard yesterday,
farmers have one of the highest suicide rates.
That's Lamar Graft, a former farmer who's now a farm safety specialist. And if you notice someone who is struggling,
we talk about the importance of engaging people in conversation, not necessarily to say, wow, you must be under a lot of stress lately, but rather, hey, how's things going? I haven't seen you in a little while. Tell me how things are going on your farm. And those kinds of conversations help to engage the person out of some of their inner turmoil and to get them talking and recognizing that people are concerned about them.
And opening the door for them to talk to a professional.
Certainly the best thing that anyone can do when they're having undue mental stress is to start talking with somebody who does provide mental health evaluation. I know that's kind of a nasty word for farmers to think about, but by the same token, the farm is not going to do very well and your family is not going to do very well if you, the chief operator, is facing undue hardship because of it.
Lamar Graft says when you think about it,
we go to see a doctor when we can no longer walk because our knees are so bad. We talk to somebody when we cut a finger off and not just put duct tape over it. And we have to do the same thing with our mental health.
And it's easier than ever to get help. Just dial 988.
You've reached the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. To talk with a counselor, stay on the line or press 0.
From the dairy farm to your belly, as June Dairy Month continues, today is National Ice Cream Soda Day and National Vanilla Milkshake Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
That was really amusing.
We like to feature small businesses on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We've just got 2 minutes to mention that in Sugar Grove, they're having an anniversary celebration on Saturday from 1 to 5. The event is free, and it's of Rocky's Dojo and Gym in Sugar Grove. Rocky Troutman is on the line. Hi, Rocky. Welcome to the show.
Well, hi, John. How are you today?
Pretty good. You are the father-son team. You and your son are 50 years in this business, huh?
Yes. Well, I'm the son. My father is Ron Troutman. He's the grandmaster of Ishinru, and I'm a master, an eighth-degree black belt, and we've owned the dojo for 50 years. Yes, sir.
Congratulations. So how's business these days? Are people signing up for that kind of exercise or class?
Yes. It's been doing well after the COVID and stuff, and after people start getting out more. I mean, the business is doing well. We're still teaching the kids. We have boxing and kickboxing. We do jujitsu here. So everything is thriving right now.
Karate as well, right?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Ishinru Karate, we teach kids and adults separately, but we teach different classes every night at different times for different age groups.
So Saturday, 1 to 5, what are you doing there? Demonstrations? I don't suppose you guys serve cake because you're all about health and fitness, right?
Well, we probably will have a cake because some people have just as much of a sweet tooth as I do. So we probably will have a cake with 50th anniversary on it. But mostly healthy stuff, yeah. We're going to be having our boxing ring. I promote fights and I promote karate tournaments also for the kids and students to compete in. But we are taking and setting up our boxing ring out in the parking lot, as we did for our 40th 10 years ago. And a lot of the students come in and show their skills.
Oh, it's a nice chance, then for them to show off what they've learned and maybe other people to get hooked. It's Rocky's Dojo and Gym in Sugar Grove celebrating 50 years, 1 to 5 p.m. Saturday the 22nd. The event is free in Sugar Grove. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, congratulations in advance, Rocky. Continued success over there.
Thank you very much. And if someone would like to be able to go to our website, it's rockysdojo.com. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too, Rocky.